Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
At the start, I'd like to thank the organizers for allowing me to present this work that we have been doing. It's really special to be here. I have nothing to disclose. I'm a physician champion, and I work with children with special health care needs with the medical home grant. And in doing this work, we have been building resources, making linkages to provide the care coordination that we need to do. But while building linkages and providing care coordination, we actually build circles of trust. We have linkages with other organizations. And once you have these linkages, then coalitions are the next step. And it's very easy to start building programs which are low cost or sometimes no cost. And that's what I really wanted to talk about today, that the work that we do allows us to get into prevention. Because prevention is where, as I go on, the focus of the talk really is. Just to go over some facts and to talk about myself, I'm a physician champion in Stamford, and I work with a community hospital. And with the shifting healthcare focus, the hospital has moved its clinics to a federally qualified health center. So I'm working with a federally qualified health center, which means that I'm working with really the underprivileged. So nearly all the underprivileged in the city come to work. I mean, we are working with them. So our focus is really the underprivileged in an extremely wealthy region. And what happens with this focus is that the providers are there, the specialists are there, but they have enough patients who have insurances that pay well to take care of those patients. So finding subspecialists in our region is kind of a challenge, and that's what medical home really becomes for us. In our region, about 16% of patients have special healthcare needs. And those are the ones that usually the medical home grant funds us to be able to take care of. Actually, maybe it helps us take care of just 10% of that population, because we have some medical homes, but only where the medical homes are built can we take care of those children. But we have, in addition, 20% children with mental health issues. And these children have lack of access to mental health services, which leads to them being school failures, later on juvenile delinquents, they go into depression, and actually, unfortunately, I know of some children who have also gone and committed suicide. Obesity, as you know, is a real issue. And I'm talking about Southwest Connecticut, not particularly about my town, because I'm the physician champion of Southwest Connecticut. Obesity, as we all know, is a real issue. And as you all may have heard, the CDC says that about 1/3 of all children born after 2000 may be diabetics. And just to expand a little, diabetics means that they'll go into their complications, which is strokes and heart disease and gangrene and lost productivity, increasing healthcare costs. So we're looking at a population that's going to be really, really scary. I already have 10 to 12 year olds who are diabetic. So you can just imagine these children having to be told that you should be eating this and not that. It's causing a lot of depression in these children. So we're getting diabetes and we're getting depression and we're getting a lot of things that are happening to the same child. No longer can we say that this is something that we don't work with. It is happening right here. To focus on mental health, the medical homes are only able to address children with high complexity. We cannot talk about the population that I'm saying is coming into our group. Our physicians are ill-equipped to deal with these mental health issues. They have not been trained. They are just pediatricians who know how to take care of the diseases they were taught to take care of. They always thought mental health was somebody else's area. Our clinics are busy. We have to see a required number of patients, which is 20 patients, and we want to do a good job. So how do we really help these children? That's the challenge that we face every single day. Looking at the number of childhood obesity, the rates, I'm actually very fortunate. I have people from the Department of Health sitting right here, and this is, again, what I'm going to talk about, our partnerships, our support of each other. We're all here. And the first data came from the Department of Health, which told us, it actually came in 2002 for the 6th graders. I haven't even gone that far back. But in 2006, they reviewed the 10th graders, and they showed us the numbers. And later, they talked about the 5-year-olds. And looking at the 5-year-olds, these numbers were scary. I was the director of my clinic, and I said, let's look at our clinic population. And these were the obese 5-year-olds in the clinic, because I'm dealing with the underprivileged. Unacceptable. And then I said, okay, let's look at our 2 to 6-year-olds. And look at the number of children combined overweight and obese in the 2 to 6-year-old. parents are always blaming somebody else because they really can't comprehend that this is happening. Not because they want to blame, but they can't believe it. But look at these two-year-olds. It's the parents. It's the parents who are taking care of these children. And these children are born in a home where the atmosphere is of sedentary activity, a lot of television viewing, and a lot of fast food or just cookies and juice, things that we think are healthy, but not really. So these are our challenges. What were the physicians doing? I thought we'd run a very good clinic, we were doing an amazing job. For mental health and behavioral health issues, the physicians were addressing the medication issues and making referrals. But again, like I said, we have very few people who do we refer to. For ADHD conditions, and that's hyperactivity disorders, attention deficit hyperactivity, they were just writing prescriptions and they thought that is what it is. It's not really what we need to do. If you have a child with ADHD and a parent tells the child once the child comes home from school, why don't you go put away your bag, get change, have something to eat and meet me in the car, the kid is lost. Very simple instructions that we give to each child. For this child, he needs each instruction to be broken down one step at a time. So we needed to empower our parents, tell them, help them do the right things because they're the caregivers. For obesity, our physicians were plotting the BMIs. They were delivering the message of 5210, and I'll talk about it later. They were referring patients to the nutritionist. We have a wonderful hospital, I think, which provided us a nutritionist for one session a week. But then how many can they talk to? So we needed more. We needed the parents to address this. And we were helped in this work by the medical home grant because I was a physician champion. And the director of health said, yes, I will give you some, rearrange the budget and you can start holding some nutrition and parenting classes. That's how we really started this work. So right now for mental health, this is what we have been able to achieve with the partnerships. While working with the child guidance, one thing led to another, and they had an opportunity to be an enhanced care clinic, which is a relationship with the pediatric clinic, and they get a little extra funding, but it really helped us. So we take care of the uninsured patients, being a federally qualified health center. That's something we do anyways, and we got streamlined appointments for our patients. Earlier, they would tell us, ask your parent to call for an appointment. That was tough. We have dysfunctional families sometimes, and asking them to call for an appointment meant it would maybe never happen and we were not part of the loop. Now we were. So now parents are assisted by our coordinators in getting the appointments. The providers receive the reports in a timely fashion. They have a systems of care. And as a pediatrician, often I've been on a Friday afternoon stumped with a patient who talks about suicide and I cannot see any more patients. I have to stop there, try and get something for this patient. Now I'm very lucky because I can ask my coordinator to call the mobile crisis team, hand over the patient to a trained professional and move on and keep doing the work that I do better than otherwise. We also have a new project in Stanford and there are three sites in Connecticut. It's called the Childhood Blueprint. It's under the umbrella of the School Readiness Council. And here we're working with children 0 to 8 years of age, putting linkages for parenting classes, telling the providers where the parenting classes are, helping those parenting classes by being their teachers and picking up some lessons. We are training our providers on topics like conflict resolution, anger management, because when these children are one, I find the parent says, oh, but he doesn't like to do this. Excuse me, this is your one-year-old, you're the parent, stop trying to be your child's friend, just be the parent and let's do some things right. We're also trying to get resource lists provided and then help them with the wraparound services. But this comes with coalitions, collaborations, everybody saying, yes, I can, rather than it's not my area. These are our relationships for the obesity effort that we've now started. We realized we had to help families, but we needed our community partners to help us get these services. So we started first working with the Department of Health. They gave us our numbers. They helped us with many other advocacy issues. We started working with Stanford Youth Foundation. It's a parent volunteer organization, takes care of children, about 2,800 children after school, all the community centers in town. The child care learning centers changed their menus in 2008, so now they serve fresh fruits and vegetables. So when parents say that my child doesn't like broccoli, the kid says, but I like it in school, not the way you make it, which means the parents don't make it. The hospital donated two gyms to the two high schools, and then the schools have worked with us on many, many, many fronts. I have somebody who used to work with the school-based health centers right here in the audience, so that's our commitment again. Stamford Table, since 2008, we work with the restaurants in the restaurant week. And this last restaurant week, we had 27 restaurants on board, and 10 restaurants all the year round are serving child-friendly, healthy menus. So that's really nice over that when kids go out to eat, instead of chips, they're getting apple slices, and they don't care what they're getting. They're out there, they're enjoying the meal, and they're enjoying it. They just accept it. So this is our message. We call ourselves Kids Fans, Kids Fitness and Nutrition Services, which use this message of 5210 to build healthy families. We offer 5 servings of fruits and vegetables, 2 hours maximum of screen time, 1 hour moderate physical activity, and 0 sugary beverages. We picked up this message in 2005 from the state of Maine. Dr. Victoria Rogers put it together along with her team, and now AAP and the Let's Move movement. So we're happy that we have a message which is accepted by everybody, a message of moderation, and all agencies in the city are very happy echoing the same message. So this is the hospital's role. The hospital has pediatricians who plot BMIs. We are lucky that we were initially doing it with just calculations, but now we have electronic medical records. Being a FQHC since 2007, we have nutritionists, and we're offering the message of 5210 with brochures. We have volunteers man the health fairs. We cover about 7 health fairs a year. The nutrition department does cooking classes in the community centers. The hospital's ambulatory department has a 1:1 Kids Fans Wellness program with a pediatrician, a social worker, a nutritionist, exercise physiologist. And we offer our program for nutrition education and physical activity at 8 sites in the community. We call it, again, a Kids Fans program. So when I first started the program in the clinic, we offered it to obese children and their families. We made it mandatory for the parents to be there because they were the ones to make the changes. We wanted the siblings to be there so that it's the family that we are treating as a whole. We offered nutrition education in 12 sessions and used hip-hop dance as a means of exercise. We offered it in the corridors, so it, again, you know, we didn't want anyone to get hurt. And the children were asked to come for a hip-hop dance session. They would continue exercising the entire week, learning the steps of the dance, not realizing they were exercising. And the parents and the children both got nutrition education. The kids were just having fun. But it was very valuable. And then we had a clinical psychologist to support one session. And these were our changes. So this is statistically significant. It allowed the hospital to feel good about what we were doing. And now we are offering the program at 9 sites. We start 2 of the sites, I'm being a little presumptuous, start this week. So at St. Clement's and Boys and Girls Club. But the other sites have been going on. But the beauty of this program is that there are 3 sites that are actually paying for all the costs. So that goes into sustainability, because the hospital cannot afford to keep paying for these things. It's small monies, but more importantly, it's sustainability that we can see, and that's why we're encouraging it. And this is our task force. You may be surprised to see A1 Theatre at the top of the list. It's so interesting. The School Readiness Council was holding the viewing of a movie called 2 Angry Moms, followed by a panel discussion, and we needed a space, and this is a very high-profile theatre. We approached them, and they said, we cannot charge you. You have to make us a team member of the task force. Sure. Please come on in. So that's what we've been able to achieve with the task force. People want to be a part of us. It's almost like an exclusive club, and it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure working with this community, and I think with our strength and our numbers, we should be able to make a change. We were very fortunate. We got an award from the Connecticut Hospital Association and the Connecticut Department of Public Health, and this, again, helped us get more partners, more people interested and happy with the work that we're doing, and we're moving on slowly and surely. We're hoping to stop adding to the number of children with special health care needs rather than wait for them to be diabetic and then say, now you're a part of the special health care needs group and we'll take care of you. Thank you.